Hi, guys. It's Emily in Mr. Robertson's office. Susan, are you on the line?
No, this is actually Susan is our coordinator. She's not on the line. This is Gary Cohen.
Okay. And who else is on the line?
I have Tom Stanton here and Mike Easterly and Landon Strobel from the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission.
Last name again, sir. I'm so sorry.
Which one? There were four of them.
The last name that you said. I have Gary Cohen, Tom Stanton, Mike Easterly, and Mr. Robertson would like to know who's on the call with him. That's all.
Right. It's Landon Strobel.
Landon. Strobel.
Okay.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Hold on 1 second.
All right. Thank you. Hi, Mr. Robertson. This is Gary Cohen with three of my colleagues, and I can give you their names again if you'd like. It's Landon Strobel.
No, that's all right. But thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you very much for agreeing to do this interview. I think that Susan Baltic, who's our coordinator for these things, mentioned to you that we were going to tape this interview in as part of our oral history of the financial crisis.
Well, I'm trying to get a copy of her letter again, if we could see that, because I actually thought she was going to be on the phone. I don't know why.
Oh, she's actually a lot more pleasant than any of us in this room, but no, she's not going to. She's our administrator that's in charge of the interview process, and she arranges them all. I'm the general counsel of the commission, and my colleagues here are senior researchers that are particularly interested in the hedge fund industry and have expertise in that area. And we picked you because you are a legend in that business, and your views on the crisis are going to be, I think, of great interest to the people who are going to study it, including us, if that's okay.
Fine, let's go.
Okay, well, as I said, we are taping the interview, and it will go into the archives and will be available, I guess, for scholars and researchers in the future. Thank you very much for agreeing to share with us your views on the crisis. You know, the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission is charged with identifying the causes of the crisis and reporting on them to the Congress, the President, and the American people. Our report is due very soon, almost a couple of months away, in December 15th, and we have started writing the report now. You've already been on record as at least briefly as to the causes of the crisis, but would you care to share with us, based on your long experience in the financial industry, what you think, first of all, what do you think the crisis actually was? What part of it morphed it from a potential recession into a financial crisis? And what do you think caused that crisis?
Well, I have a little different idea from a lot of people. I think one of the biggest causes of the crisis was the overall crisis was the housing crisis. And that was caused really, I think, by very good intentions from Congress and really so many Americans who thought it was a wonderful idea for every family to have its own home. And so we made it very easy to finance these homes. And eventually people got to the stage where they thought, well, I'll get a little bigger home than I need, because when it comes time to sell it, I'll be able to get more for it. And it was just sort of a vicious circle like that caused the whole country to lever up on houses. And I think during the preceding period, the various Federal Reserve chiefs had made it their policy, when we ever had any kind of slight slowdown in the economy, that they would flood the system with money, and therefore the threat of debt was not a real threat to people, and they didn't hesitate to leverage up. And I think it was no one person's or two people's fault, but it was a pretty severe problem brought on by a very poorly run Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which really, have been kept alive. For what purpose? I don't understand.
You, I understand that you you shorted the subprime market in 2008. I guess maybe even starting in 2007. I'm curious. I don't remember reading about you in The Big Short, so congratulations on keeping your name out of the book, if indeed you did. But how did you happen to come to the decision to see that the subprime market was overdue for a drop, and was there something that you?
Well, it was just that I felt that something was going wrong, and you'll find this interesting what I tell you in a little while. But I thought the way to leverage that was, I mean, the way that I could get a lot of leverage on that with very little amount of money put up were the subprime those things, and we did take a reasonably good position in them, and I think we may have even been in them earlier than you think, and than you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, any rate.
Did you see?
I mean, for a long time they did absolutely nothing,
mm-hmm.
And I remember it so well. I was in a hospital out in Mayo's recovering from an operation, and I called the office one day and I said, "How was our month?" And they said, "Well, it was really a terrible month for us." And I said, "Well, I sort of thought that," and so I wasn't too upset. But any rate, then they called back an hour later and said, "No, no, 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 no. We've just checked all the loan contracts, and suddenly they've had a big spurt, and nothing had happened to them, and suddenly they spurted up in about January of 2007."
Do you have a suspicion about the housing market?
Not so much. I just had the overall effect, and a friend of mine who is very good at financial stocks told me about these things, and there just was huge leverage in them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so we took we took the risk. And the bad news from my point of view is that later on I decided that they had run their course, and that I should really get into, in effect, what are puts on long-term bonds. Because I thought, you know, when we started printing money, bond rates would jump up. And of course, they've done nothing but go down since then.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, both places were sort of hedges that where a little bit of investment, if they worked, would go a long way towards ameliorating the problem if there was a disaster.
Tell me if you think that changes in the financial service industry, because you've been, you know, you're a long, long time observer and participant. You noticed any changes in the financial service industry since the time you started getting involved that you think have made things worse or better, or, you know, with all the financial innovations that have been developed, the changing nature of the investment banking and the brokerage community? Do you have any views on whether any of that contributed to the severity or the pervasiveness of the crisis?
Well, I suppose in hindsight you could say that some of the derivatives did. I'm still sanguine enough to think that over the long term, they're not bad.
Mm-hmm. 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 One of the views is that the crisis itself was a run on the shadow banking industry, and I guess with your in the hedge fund industry, I guess it'd be fair to say that the hedge fund community is a participant in the shadow banking industry, at least to the extent that funds buy, might buy commercial paper or engage in repos or buy CDOs or RMBS securities and so on, which are all non-regulated bank-like activities. Did you ever have a concern that this unregulated parallel banking universe would lead to problems, or is it something that people were even thinking about before it finally hit in 2007-2008?
I really wasn't very aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you ever look carefully into the CDOs? I guess when you started going short in the subprime, you certainly were paying attention to it then. But did you look at the growth of the CDO industry and the RMBS?
What CDO? I'm bad on initials. What? Credit default obligations? What do you mean?
Collateralized debt obligation.
Okay, where they just jammed them all together.
Exactly.
That's
a good description.
I just wasn't. It was a little out of my. That was a little out of my purview. I didn't really know much about that.
You were primarily an equity guy, I think, in most of your.
I was, and then I got very interested in macro in the early 90s, and became just knowledgeable enough to be dangerous.
Go ahead. Okay. I was interested in your experience in the Russian default crisis and your observations there. Do you see any parallel here between the two of them?
Not really. Can I say something off the record?
It's hard to do that. I guess we could stop the tape for a minute.
All right. I really have a juicy tidbit, but it would have to be off the record.
Well, one of my questions was going to be in terms of what market participants took from that episode, whether they learned something in particular or thought they learned something.
From what?
From the Russian default crisis.
Yeah, I mean, you were still actively managing your fund, I think, in 1990.
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
And I managed to take a very big hickey.
You were not alone. I got to tell you that I was actually in the investment in the lawyer side, and most of my clients also took hickeys. So you had company.
Well, I remember that very well, and. I had a wonderful advisor, and I called this person about the likelihood of America helping the Russians, and this was a really good person to talk to. And the person replied, "No American president would want to see this sort of thing happen to Russia. Of course, they will cough up the money." And so I bet accordingly, and And of course, accordingly, they did not go.
you talked earlier about the Fed flooding the market with liquidity every time a recession loomed. Excuse me.
Yeah, well, I mean, that may be a little exaggerated, but right. I mean, they certainly eased rates every time.
Right. Do you think that changed behavior? Were people?
Oh, I definitely do. I think young people got the impression, why not borrow? There's really very little risk in it. And they did. And
when you're talking about young people, who in particular?
Well, I'm talking about young homeowners and just young people going out and they're starting their lives. Those of us who, it wasn't quite as bad for people like myself, we'd probably been burned on you know, money in olden times. But certainly during the Greenspan years, any sign of a problem caused an easing in money. Right. And so I think people came to the conclusion they really weren't going to be burned much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so is this distinct from just a policy of keeping interest rates low, you know, most of the time? Or I'm thinking particularly during, the crisis periods when they flood the market with liquidity to prevent a recession.
Well, they've certainly done that now, and now, as we both know, they're printing money as fast as they can.
Yeah.
And going to print it even faster. But, I mean, that'll, you know, be out in another month or two, but they're going to pass it. And they're getting away with it because bond rates are going down, not up. And one of the reasons for that, of course, is that with the money, they're buying bonds.
Got it. Mm-hmm. That's true. They're buying treasuries.
That's right.
Did you believe there was a... Have you heard the phrase the Greenspan put?
I think I have heard the phrase, but I don't know quite what that means.
Basically, the idea that if... you know, when these crises came along, because the Fed would flood the market with liquidity, you didn't have to worry about asset prices falling. You essentially had a put on the asset price.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that was, you know, thought to be the case, but of course we saw it finally catch up with us in home prices. They just couldn't.
Right.
Sustain the level of debt.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the leverage in connection with home ownership and stuff. In your history in the financial community, I don't know whether you followed bank stocks or investment banking firms when they went public, but did you see an increase in leverage, and did you, you know, you were you aware of it, the leverage of the financial services industry as well? Or was it something that you was outside of your area of investment expertise, or at least?
No, I think we were aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have a view now of financial regulation? Whether you know there should have been more. Or did you see a perhaps from the 80s to the you know the 2007s or 8s? Seemed like there was a conscious decrease in regulation, or at least in the both the types of regulation and the willingness to actively regulate. Did you notice that at all in your experience, whether there was a change in regulatory emphasis?
Yeah, I think everybody knew the regulatory situation there was less regulation.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a view as to whether or not that helped accelerate or cause the crisis, or do you think it would have happened anyway? Or
well, I think the crisis and the crisis was caused by people borrowing and spending instead of saving and going without.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you know, that was, you know, we just have done that to excess. And the tragedy is now no one even seems to worry about the fact that we've even gotten worse. The only way that America can pay its debts is to print money. And I thought maybe I was one of the few people who understood that, but now I think everybody on Wall Street knows that, and they're not, you know, nobody cares.
Are you seeing any of that in the investment in investment strategies now? Are there people taking advantage of it? And, you know, do you think that there's enough enough staying power? I guess one of the things about taking a position is that you've got to have a lot of staying opportunity to stay in the game while you're waiting for something.
Oh, I mean, there's a general purview that everything is fine and that everything will be all right, and that so we print a little money, so what?
You know, as Edward Dirksen said, and I'll update him, you know, a trillion here and a trillion there, and it starts to add up to real money.
Exactly.
Tell me about the hedge fund industry. You're still active in the business, I guess, through an investor and a participant in the are they the Tiger Cubs, with all of the firms that you've helped set up and spin off. How did the hedge fund industry react to the crisis? Did you see, in the ones that you're familiar with, did you see a lot of liquidity issues where you had investor withdrawals, things of that nature? And what was the reaction in general, and how did people deal with it?
Well, I thought people dealt with it amazingly well, but I think the Tiger Cubs and the Tiger Seeds both have a generally conservative outlook, and so relatively they had not been hurt nearly as bad as most people. But I know there was one very good investor from Tiger who lost about 30-35% of his net worth in 08.
Mm-hmm.
And yet was a huge giver in the charities to which he, you know, was connected. And I admired that very much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did the funds that you're involved with have sufficiently frequent liquidity so that they became subject to the kind of market, to the,
so that
they became subject to the kind of market panic that I saw in towards the end of 2008, where all the investors were saying, you know, I don't care how well you're doing, give me back my money. Did you see a lot of that at all?
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we catered to that type of person, and I think our people, you know, had generally speaking a very good performance relative to the market. Here it was incredible in 07 and 08.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did you do in 09? I read that you also did very well.
Oh, we did not as a group, we did not do particularly well in 09.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very disappointing.
Tell me about compensation practices. I've heard people in the commercial banking and the investment banking industry blame the hedge fund industry for the compensation practices that they've developed, because there's, you know, an opportunity in the hedge fund world to make an extraordinary amount of money, I guess, as opposed to the remarkable amount of money that you can pay make in the investment banking business.
You see, that's correct, and that's what you hit on, is why the hedge funds do so well, is because and I think they will continue, because this is a fair way to pay people, and people end up making a lot more money than they would but working for, you know, all the big investment banks and all that. And I think that the fact that the best become hedge fund managers ensures the validity of the system.
Do you think at the traditional banks or the big mega banks that either the structure or the amount of compensation had anything to do with decisions that might have led to the crisis?
I mean, for example, some people have said that the incentive structures created an incentive.
I just don't know about that. I mean, I think. You know, anybody that would quote, I mean, there have been a lot of statements that came out, and, you know, in hindsight, people looked at, the statement of Prince, I think, you know, we're still dancing, and some of those things. But I those weren't very prudent statements, but and they were probably in effect symbols of the excess that was in the air. But the excess was borrowing, and not saving. I mean, that was the real problem.
What do you think about the whole concept of too big to fail? When the government stepped in and assisted the Bear Stearns transaction in the, you know, early part of 08, and then didn't do something similar for Lehman in September, October?
Well, I don't quite agree with that. They essentially made Bear Stearns bankrupt too. So it was worth 0% of what it had been, you know, a year before, as opposed to, you know, 5% or whatever. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, they practically did let Bear Stearns go under, and probably Bear Stearns would have. I think they had recommended even a lower price, but the somebody else came in with a higher price, so they had to, I guess, let that go. I thought that was a little bit of a tough rap on the government myself.
They kept the creditors whole, and some of the arguments are that the creditors played a disciplinary role that equity holders don't necessarily do. Do you buy into that argument?
I think that's, I'm not going to get into an argument over
okay,
it,
no,
I would
not.
Say that probably, yeah, did happen, sir.
What have you been paying attention to the new laws that have been passed recently? Do you have a view as to whether those are the kind of right things to to do if they had been in effect earlier that would have made any difference, or do you think that they're still looking for a solution to this kind of problem?
Well, you know, you have a lot of money-minded quarterbacks that know exactly what to do after the cat is out of the bag, and I don't know. I don't see a great problem in Goldman Sachs, for instance, being a you know, having a prop desk. I mean, I, you know, it's a little bit a time horizon. I mean, they seem to be able to borrow all the money in the world to take positions in trading stocks or trading bonds, but they really aren't allowed to take a long-term position. And I mean, basically, I don't know quite what's wrong with having a long-term position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not. What I guess I'm saying is, there probably should be maybe some constraints on lending or borrowing. Or, I mean, on borrowing, but I'm not. I don't know why that I think some of this stuff was sort of done after the cat got out. I mean,
yeah. Well, the I guess the question really is how much leverage is an appropriate amount of leverage, or to flip it around, how much capital do you need in order to...
Right. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And who should decide?
That's right.
Who should decide?
Who do you think should decide?
Well, I think there are banking commissions, and, you know, I think maybe in relation with the Secretary of the Treasury, there ought to be certain SEC banking commissions and that did set such limits. I don't think that's such a terrible thing to do.
Right. I wanted to change course a little bit.
Please.
And you had an experience with the tech bubble where you were betting against the market, and it turned out that you were correct, but
early,
a little early.
Just a tad.
Yeah, right. Right. I was wondering if you could describe in more detail what was happening.
And how bubbles happen in your view, because that certainly was a bubble. It was almost as big as the housing bubble by some accounts.
Well, that's a very interesting thing. I mean, I think it wasn't as big of a bubble as the housing bubble, because you know, the housing bubble was, I mean, you know, if people didn't lend sort of marginal buyers' money, they were often criticized, and of course that was the wrong thing to have done, and it was the wrong thing to have done both for the lender and the borrower.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because the borrower really couldn't afford to borrow, and the lender was making a damn dumb loan.
Do you think, it raises an interesting question. Do you think it was the lenders were pushing dumb loans, or do you think the borrowers were asking for them, or do you think it was just both? I mean, you know, there was certainly a lot of money to be made on all levels.
I don't think, you know, the lenders were, I mean, let's face it. I mean, the borrowers were greedy and the lenders were greedy, and they both thought they had good deals, and so they and as it turned out, neither one had a good deal.
Mm-hmm. What I was sort of moving towards with my question is, you have a bubble forming, and I'm wondering if there's anything or anybody who can stop it. One might be short sellers, but that doesn't always occur, so I was wondering about your opinion here.
Well, I do think short sellers, that is one of the best things that they do, is that they, you know, do prick bubbles. I mean, there's no question in my mind that Enron would have been a lot higher, and people would have been hurt much worse had it not been for Jim Chanos, mm-hmm. who is vilified for being the shorter. Right. But he was the only person that didn't say, including the President of the United States, who loved that head of Enron, you
right.
know. I mean, they're the most respected people in Texas.
Yeah.
And I think that the short sellers, I do think that is a good, but not the only thing. And I suppose that I think again, Greenspan. In historic times, people have upped the margin requirement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you do that, you just have to borrow more money to, you have to put up more money for the same amount of purchases. I mean, that seems to me to be a self-evident thing, to increase the margin. Well, I don't know why on earth we didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess in the housing lending business, sometimes the margin was infinite when you.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about the margin accounts on stocks,
mm-hmm.
and I'm talking about now the stock bubble,
right.
The internet bubble, all that. I mean, one, the short sellers, and two, why the Federal Reserve didn't up the margin requirement, I just cannot believe. And I think Greenspan said that there was no correlation between, a margin requirement and stock performance. But in actuality, I can remember, generally speaking, when they did raise the margin requirements, the market. That was a big factor. People realized that they were pricking the bubble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the arguments at the Fed was that it was undesirable to prick a bubble. You sound like you disagree, or what is your opinion?
No, I definitely disagree. I think when things are not going good, you have to stimulate a little bit, and when things are really going too good and bubbles are appearing, then you have to put some pressure on things.
Yeah, nobody. It's a big political decision to do that.
Right.
So that's a very hard thing for people to do.
Yeah.
Say.
I agree. I don't think it's that big. I mean, that depends on the way you want to run your job. But mm-hmm. I mean, if you're really trying to have an orderly, decent economy, you have to do that sometimes.
Right. Do you think?
I mean, you can't just stimulate,
right.
stimulate, and
right.
then take your foot off the pedal. You just can't keep stimulating forever.
Do you think the government has the capability to identify these bubbles and to deal with them?
Oh, sure. They see them, but I think you hit it on the nail. They don't they don't want to do that. And they might do it in January, right after the inauguration, but they don't want to do it, a year out when there's an election just another year out.
Yeah, that's true. It makes it harder and harder to do that kind of stuff.
And then, maybe term limits would help some of this stuff too. But that's pretty far fetched.
Yeah, that'd be hard to get. Well, is there anything anything that we haven't asked you about that you'd like to address or comment on?
No, but I've enjoyed the conversation, and if you all want to, talk again, I'm delighted to do it, I appreciate you calling me. I think it's good to look at things, and I after they've happened, and sometimes that's the way you can correct things like this from happening in the future, and I really wish somebody would consider, in periods of wild speculation, increasing the margin requirement.
Well, certainly, the Fed didn't. Certainly, during the tech bubble, they didn't, and during the housing bubble, it wouldn't have been exactly a margin issue. But it certainly could have. They could have done it by requiring down payments, I guess, and things of that nature, which is the real estate equivalent of a.
Fannie and Freddie could have increased their requirements, which their political appointees virtually.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jamie Dimon, when he was testifying before our commission, said, financial crisis is something that happens every, he said every 5 or 10 years. Thank God it's not quite that often. But do you think these kind of crises are inevitable, and this is just something that we're going to have to live with, or do you think it can get better?
Well, I'm hoping it can get better, but I do. And you see, I don't happen to think we're out of this last one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think President Obama should have asked the American people and should have told them they were going to have to. Should have told them that we had to sacrifice and we had to get out of the situation we put ourselves in, and I think they would have done it. But instead, we are printing money.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier.
Mm-hmm.
A lot easier.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Let me.
I enjoyed it and appreciate y'all calling. Bye bye.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good. Bye bye.